Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll, and today I've got NXT champion Drew McIntyre. Drew returns to TIJ 3 years after his first appearance, which came just days after his release from WWE, and what a story he has. From that day to his triumphant return as the champion of NXT, he's talking about forging his way on the indie scene from WCPW and ICW in the UK to TNA here in the States and all the other indie promotions he wrestled for around the globe. He's talking about how he finally got back to WWE and the circumstances that led up to his return, including passing up a big offer from TNA and a possible chance to wrestle in Japan with the Young Bucks. Right. Drew's also working and training with Shawn Michaels. What, are you kidding me? And we'll share some of the big lessons he's learned from Shawn. Despite having 17 years of experience already in the business, he's still learning. He's back in the WWE after being fired 3 years ago, and what a story it is. It's a great conversation coming up with a really good dude. I couldn't be happier for Drew and his return to WWE, and I'm looking forward to his move to the main roster, which I'm sure is coming very, very soon. So, Drew is on the way, and so is my fourth book. No is a four-letter word. It comes out August 29th, this Tuesday, but you can pre-order it now at my Amazon store, amazon.com/shop/IamJericho. The book is the 20 principles of how I made my dreams come true, and it's going to help you achieve your dreams as well. 20 principles of how you can make your goals and dreams come true. Pre-order it now, and if you haven't downloaded the new Podcast One app, what are you waiting for, man? I mean, come on. Just hit up the App Store or Google Play, download the app, and start watching all the great 360 VR videos. There's over 1,000 of them on the app. You'll feel like you're right there in the studio with your favorite podcasts. And the app also lets you interact with other podcast fans and access behind-the-scenes content. Very, very fruit. And there's no other podcast app like this available. So download it. Get to exploring all the cool special features. And check that out now. And we are about to hit the road with Fozzy for another round of dates on the Judas Rising Tour here in the United States of America. America, man. We're going out with Gemini Syndrome. What a great band they are. And The Stir next month, starting September 26th. Take the last train to Clarksville in Tennessee at the Warehouse. Fort Wayne, Columbus, Detroit, Libertyville, Janesville, Wisconsin, Buffalo, Wilkes-Barre, Worcester, Wilmington, Delaware, Wilmington, North Carolina, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. All of these great shows happening next month. It's going to be a great rock and roll party. And also then we're going to Europe. Wow, there's a lot of shows. October 27th, Birmingham, Dublin, Belfast, Chester, Manchester, London, Sheffield, Glasgow, Newcastle. And then we go across the pond to Amsterdam, Aschaffenburg, Pratteln, Switzerland, Roncade, Italy, Rome, Vienna, Munich, Essen, Hamburg, and Genk, Belgium. Wow, I can't wait to go to Genk, Belgium. I heard it's like the greatest city, better than Las Vegas. And we're doing VIP meet and greets and pre-show mini concerts on all those dates. It's the best VIP meet and greet you can get in the business. We will play some songs for you and the other VIPs that you haven't heard. We'll take your requests. We'll do whatever you want. You want us to play like a Kajagoogoo song? We'll do it. Who cares? The Fozzy VIP is one of the best. Go to FozzyRock.com and check out the VIP experience and come rock with us. And speaking of rock, Judas, We're going to play it for you right now, right here on Talking Jericho. It's Judas by Fozzy.
On the inside, you are innocence personified, and I will drag you down and sell you out. Run away. I am cold like December snow. I have carved out this soul made of stone, and I will drag.
Judas video has hit 8 million views on YouTube in just 4 months. Thank you so much for all of you who have checked out the song and who have made it the big hit that it is. Super excited to have the huge hit song Judas by Fozzy, and we attribute all that to you. So thank you so much. And NXT champion Drew McIntyre is coming up after I talk about one more tour. Diamond Dallas Page, DDP UK Tour. Dallas is bringing his hilarious stories, over-the-top motivation, Q&A in person, and DDP Yoga Live workshops to the UK starting September 8th. You'll be able to meet Dallas. You can take a selfie with him if you want. Have him sign an autograph. Join the Inspiration Meets Perspiration. Experience Dallas's infectious energy for yourself. Learn how to do his complete workout program. Go to ddpuktour.com to reserve your spot and get all the details. That's ddpuktour.com. He's also doing DDP yoga workshops in Glasgow, Manchester, Birmingham, London, and Dallas. If Dallas isn't going to a city near you anytime soon, get the DDP Yoga Now app and get on track to healthier living. You know what DDP Yoga has done for me in my career. Saved my career in so many ways. I've got the DDP Yoga Now app on my phone so I can just open the app and do a workout wherever I am. There's over 150 workouts on the app, as well as the opportunity to do live workouts from the DDP Yoga Performance Center in Smyrna, Georgia. And if DDP Yoga can help you get in shape and live a healthier life, I'm telling you, you got to check this out now. Dallas has thought of everything because he truly cares about all of you, the sexy beast listeners of Talk is Jericho. He wants everyone to live a healthier life, meet all of your fitness goals, and his DDP Yoga program is great for anyone and everyone, any age, any skill level. And with the app, you track your progress, get nutrition tips, recipes, all the motivation you need to stick with the program and stay on your game plan. And Diamond Dallas Page has made it so easy for you, that's right, you, looking at you, to get on board his life-changing program. Take advantage of the tremendous deal that Dallas is offering. He's giving you 20% off the DDP Yoga Now app and all DDPY merch, swag, clothing. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. It's time to own your life. Get in the best shape of your life, physically and mentally, and do it now. ddpyoga.com/Jericho.
HBO's Game of Thrones is back for its 7th season. Winter is finally here, and so are the White Walkers. Will the 7 kingdoms of Westeros survive the threat from the north, or will they fall in the looming war for the Iron Throne? After you're done watching an episode, join the discussion here on the Game of Thrones After Show on Podcast One. Every week, our hosts discuss each episode in detail, from shocking twists to fan theories, as the series chronicles the violent struggle among the realm's noble families for ultimate power. Join the fray every week on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
Talk is Jericho.
Okay, so this is a very monumental moment because 3 years ago?
Yep, just under 3 years ago, I believe.
We sat in this very studio, and you had just been released by the WWE. I'm talking about Drew McIntyre. You're Drew McIntyre again.
Hello, everybody.
After you lost it. And you had just been released, and you were vowing that someday you would get back into the WWE, and here you are as the NXT champion. How does that feel for you?
There's absolutely no word that can possibly describe how I feel. Like right now, it's pretty cool that this was the first thing I did. Like once I was released from WWE, you said you wanted to have me on the show. You know, I got to say my piece, and the final soundbite was, I'll be back.
Right.
Just got to go out and do my thing. And I went out, I did my thing. It worked out pretty good, and I'm back, NXT champion, and we're back in the studio. It's pretty crazy.
That's right, because you had come in just a couple days or maybe a week after being released.
Yeah,
or
it was literally within the first week.
Yeah.
The first appearance I did was in Scotland, maybe 2 weeks after I was released, and that kind of got some buzz. So you got me going. The Scottish appearance got me going. Then I won the Evolve title in my first match and started rolling from there. But this is where it all began.
It's so amazing to me. And I know, you know, you came in and you had a brave face and you were, you know, obviously a little bit shaken up. But how did you really feel when you got let go?
You know, honestly, initially I was like, wow, okay. You know, this is the first time I've not had my life, you know, set this is the way it's going to go. Like I was in school right up to age 21. I was signed, which was always my goal, to come to WWE at 21. So I moved from my home in Scotland, and WWE became my home for 8 years. So I never really had a chance to, you know, grow up, I guess, or live outside the nest or outside of a system and following, you know, specific, this is what you do, this is where you have to be. So it was the first time I was like, okay, I'm in charge for the first time ever. This is a little bit scary, but there's one thing that I know that I've always done is wrestling. So I'm going to implement everything I've ever learned. We live in a social media age. I think I've got a good game plan. I think I can change the way, you know, people do things once they're gone from WWE, not just flying under the radar, hoping to come back one day, but to build their name. And I had a very clear vision of what I wanted to do. It's just that nobody had really done it before. So I was hoping to implement that and just people believing in me, giving me a platform. And as the buzz grew, you know, giving me those platforms, it was up to me to score the goals. So, you know, it was scary initially, but as I went along, the confidence grew and grew, and I started seeing other people following suit and was just, you know, proud to start to build that model for people to follow in the future.
You mentioned that you came in like at 20 years old or 21 years old.
Yeah, I was signed at 21.
So, and you mentioned, like you were talking today, your car broke down, whatever it was, and you said that you learned to drive here in the States. And Seamus taught you.
Hell yeah.
To drive.
I learned to drive in Tampa, Florida. They gave me a license. I don't know how much I should say. They might take away my license. But I've had it for like 9 years now. You can't take it away. But basically, I got it in a day and I had about 3 lessons in my life at that point.
What did Seamus teach you?
Basically, like Wade Barrett was doing the theory test on the computer. And I looked at the questions and I went, this doesn't look so hard. I'm just going to take this. So I took it, got 100%. I was like, wow. Okay, like the questions were like, is this red? I was like, this is a trick question. Like, I don't know the trick. I'll just say yes. And I was like, okay, that was pretty easy. And then they told me, you know, you got to drive the car around a little bit. So Seamus took me out to the car park, showed me how the automatic cars work. And it was like playing a video game. So sure enough, I took the test later that day and passed also. They gave me a license. I called my dad and went, I have a driving license. He went, oh, good for you, son. You've been taking lessons I didn't know about. No. Seamus just took me to the car park for an hour. Now I have a license. I'm in charge of a killing machine.
Makes you kind of scared for the future of America, how easy it is to get a driver's
license. It's been 9 years now. I learned on the job, much like wrestling. I learned on the job, except, you know, you can kill more people with a car.
But starting out so young, I mean, like you said, you come into the business, and we talked about this before, when you're in the WWE and you get the big, you know, you're the whatever Vince called you, you're the chosen one, you're the future of the company. And, you know, I'm sure at 21 years old, I know what I was like when I was 21. You think it's going to last forever. And it's like, he said I was the guy, so therefore I'm set for life sort of thing. Is that how you thought at the time?
Yeah, when you never consider, like, the ending. You're just going to live in the moment.
Right.
When I was 21, when I got signed, I came over. I just turned 22. I went to OVW for the last 6 months, and the writers happened to be there in my first week I was in America. And then I was put on TV on SmackDown with Dave Taylor my third week in America. I was like the fastest guy ever on TV.
Hmm.
And I remember when I was in the ring working one of the Major Brothers. That's Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins.
Mm-hmm.
And when the referee came over to me and was like, work the hard cam, kid. And I remember kind of turning to him and go, what the hell is a hard cam? Like, I work all 4 sides, brother. But, you know, they realized I wasn't quite ready at the time. So, you know, they kept me on the road and I was working with all the talent, trying to get me up to speed off TV. And then eventually, 6 months later, when OVW closed, myself and Wade Barrett and a few of the guys were moved to FCW. I remember you describing going from like WCW to WWE. It was like going from black and white to color. I was like, this is where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
Florida, the nice weather, you know, everyone's in shape and, you know, it's a good vibe around here. It's not like being in Deliverance. This is where I'm supposed to be. And I really learned at FCW. And then it came time for the, you know, the opportunity that I got as the chosen one thing. And I was like, okay, no, this is just normal. This is the way it is. This is the way it's always going to be, which is obviously not the case. And, you know, it really find out who you are, like when you get a huge opportunity and it doesn't work out and you, you know, like come down quite a bit and you've got to, you know, ask yourself, you know, do you believe in yourself enough to keep going, to keep pushing through? And I'm hoping that, you know, my journey and my story is an example to everybody out there. It doesn't have to be in wrestling, whatever you do, that if you believe hard enough that you can do absolutely anything.
And isn't it crazy how, you know, the other champion or, you know, 3 champions in the 3 companies, you're one of them and Jinder Mahal is the other one, your old partner from 3MB, who also got fired the same day you did.
Same day, and he's got kids.
Wow. Does he have kids?
That's what I hear. But yeah, it's pretty crazy. I love Jinder's story.
Oh, yeah, Heath.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
But he's amazing.
Yeah.
Cracks me up. But yeah, Jinder's story is great. You know, when I left, as I say, I had a very clear plan in my head. I knew exactly what I was going to do. Like, you know, he wasn't quite the same when it came to wrestling. He spoke about this, and I've said I'm not speaking out of turn.
No, he was on my show and saying this, yeah.
So, yeah, you know, he wasn't too sure. He's a smart guy. He had his business, you know, areas going. He had his real estate going. He was talking about opening, like, a franchise or something. But, you know, the wrestling he was just doing here and there. He wasn't pushing to get to the places with buzz like I was doing. And, you know, he wasn't too sure, and it sounded like he was pretty much going to give up, which sucks. I remember we had a meal one day, and he was talking about it. He'd, you know, not been working out as hard, wasn't looking as good as he usually did. And then I was, you know, feeling down about it, and we're talking to my wife about it, like, man, it sucks. And then just one day he just started going, screw this. He started busting his ass. He told me he got the call. Was it good for you? He told me, you know, he'd made some changes in his life. He was working hard. Then he cut out the alcohol. Then he became the most insane body guy of all time. And I trained with him, and he was working his absolute arse off. And it was so cool to watch him push himself so hard. And when he won that title, I was there that day. And I assure you, when the three count happened, I hit the biggest 3MB air guitar of all time and popped all the boys in catering. But I was just so over the moon, and I ran like the ultimate warrior from the catering all the way to the gorilla. I was the first guy there waiting for him when he got back.
Oh, that's great. What were you, were we there? Just
We were taping the takeover in Chicago the night before.
Oh, I see. That so, was right.
I was on the TV taping before the takeover, and we stayed the next day for the pay-per-view. So I told Randy and Jinder, do not tell me the result. I want to just react how I react.
Yeah.
Literally almost hit the roof.
How bad does Heath Slater feel right now?
I told him already. Like, I've told like everyone. I told Hunter. I told Heath. I was like, right, Heath, it's up to you now. Just get jacked. It's as simple as that.
Well, he's the only one that didn't get fired, at least, though.
Oh, yeah,
so
exactly.
That going for him.
Yeah,
which
so
is so funny. If you take the three members of 3MB and put them up, don't know anything about wrestling, just look at the three. Who are the two that get fired and who's the one that stays? He's not the one I would choose.
You said it, not me.
I told him that. But I mean, so let me ask you this, because you were, from the moment you got let go to this point in seeing you, I never did not see you. You were always working somewhere and working at the highest of levels, wherever it was that you went. So what was your game plan? Like, you mentioned that you were just about ready to go to Scotland, because there's a big scene in the UK right now for independent wrestling, correct?
Yeah, it's huge. I could see the Scottish scene was starting to grow, and the UK scene in general was starting to grow. And I thought, that's the first place I'm going to go. I'm going to go back to ICW, Insane Championship Wrestling. I was their first ever champion, and they got some great buzz going. And I knew I had to get my mission statement, who I was, and what my plans were. And that's exactly where I was going to go. So I contacted the promoter, Mark Dallas, who's the one guy who didn't message me. The day I was released, I must have got a message from every promoter in the world.
Really?
Everyone that I know,
yeah.
Saying, when am I going to book you? He was the one guy who didn't message me, and I messaged him saying, yo, you're not going to contact me about doing the show. And he was like, you know, you're my friend. I thought you might be upset losing your job. The one guy who didn't contact me. And I went, well, here's the deal. I want to come to ICW first. So he mentioned he had a show in a couple of weeks. So obviously he can't do that. And I told him, why? Why can't I do that? That's exactly what I want to do and what nobody will expect. So we made a plan to sneak
in. Why did
you
think that you couldn't do it?
He just thought I wouldn't do it because it just happened. It was fresh. I wanted some time or whatever, because I'd not been nonstop working my entire life. I'd never had any time off.
But when you get let go, like, are you allowed to work wherever you want the next day?
So? Yeah. But like, aside, like, say, American TV.
Okay, gotcha.
You can do whatever you want. So we started talking about a plan and, keeping it a big secret. Nothing's ever secret anymore. So we kept it between literally himself, myself, his missus, my wife. And that's literally all it knew at first. And then they booked my ticket to come in. I snuck into the country with, like, a hoodie and a hat on and hid in my dad's home with the blinds closed, playing Guitar Hero for 3 days with my buddies, sneaking to the gym once a day.
But that's the thing, too. When you go to Europe, they don't even check your passport half the time.
Yeah. But the problem is, like, Scotland's such a small place, and I'm a giant. There's only 5 million of us, so, like, I can't really walk anywhere without anyone knowing who I am.
But no one noticed, though.
So, like, oh, no, like, I got through the security, and I think there was one guy who maybe asked for a picture, like, at the security desk.
Mm-hmm.
So I got past that, got to my dad's, hid there. I snuck in the car, drove to the building the day of the show. The BBC were filming a documentary just starting that day. So they caught me coming in the back door, and I hid downstairs. And there's a famous comedy show in Scotland called Still Game. You know, the guys there were doing a surprise appearance halfway through the show, and they're like huge celebrities in Scotland. I heard their reaction from the basement. I was like, oh my God, I'm never going to top this. My return's going to be crap, and everyone's going to chant 3MB or something. And right. I was all worried about it. And, when the time came and the lights, went off, and I ran to the ring and back on, it was one of the craziest feelings I've ever had. The reaction was unbelievable. And, I spoke my mind, told everybody my plans, which were basically, this little company, can become a huge thing, take over the world. The UK scene is going to show the world what we're all about, and I'm going to show everybody the real Drew Galloway, Drew McIntyre, which might have sounded insane coming from the 3MB guy, but I believed it. And, as time went on, we really showed everybody the UK scene what it was all about. There was 1,500 people there that night, and at the show this past November, we grew to 8,000 people in under 3 years, and the biggest independent show of all time. And Finn Balor was on the show hitting me with a pipe and stuff. And everyone talks about the UK scene, and we've grown together just because the unbelievable level of talent now. Because I assure you, before I got signed with WWE, there was nobody. There was like me, Sheamus, Wade. We're all at the same level teaching each other. And when we left, everybody just kept going, getting better, created all these great characters, great abilities. Everyone's so different. We were all the same, and it was just ready. I just needed someone to, I guess, kick it in the arse and just use the name value and buzz I had at the time to really get it going. And people like yourself, and you know, I remember Mick Foley at the time, and everybody putting my name out there and putting that video out there at the time really helped get me going. I can't thank you all enough for it.
Yeah, because I, you know, we laugh about the 3MB thing, but that was more of just a placeholder. Like, that was not who Drew McIntyre was as a performer. I mean, obviously, A, you are a giant, so to speak. Big guy, good-looking guy, good work. Sometimes in the business, the longevity of the business, if, like for me, 27 years doing this, sometimes you are playing a character or doing something that you don't really want to do. I was the co-intercontinental champion with China for about 3 months, which was the absolute dumbest thing. But
I remember enjoying that.
Yeah, you enjoyed it. Well, I didn't. But what are you going to do? So when you, I know you probably had a little bit of a complex. It's like, here's a 3MB guy. If I'm in Scotland and Drew McIntyre Galloway shows up after just being let go, I'm going, holy shit, this is great. And I think, like you said, that was one of the reasons why the UK scene was kickstarted, because it's huge now. There's so much stuff going on in the UK and so many great performers coming out of the UK, going to New Japan, going to NXT. I mean, they've started their own UK company just to sign up the guys so they wouldn't go anywhere else, correct?
Yeah, it's crazy to watch the growth, just to watch the level it was at when I got back. And I was literally traveling the whole world. I was the busiest wrestler for the past 3 years. Like, again, I have no idea how my wife stayed with me. I was never home. Like, I was literally on the road the whole time. I was working myself as much as possible.
And, well, you had a mission.
Yeah, I was literally just obsessed. It was just blind. Like, this is what I want to do. And I loved it. You know, it's my passion. I love it. I didn't, you know, regret it for 1 second, as much as sore as I was, as tired as I was. I just kept pushing and pushing. And as time went on and I watched all the different scenes across the world grow, I saw like the UK scene. I was telling everyone, you know, and the promos and that, you know, like, that's one thing I've learned to do over the past few years. I'm more comfortable in the microphone and I've learned just to be myself and relax. Mm-hmm. But I was just telling everybody, this is the best scene in the world. And I'm not just saying it because that's what you say when you're the good guy on a microphone right now. I legitimately have been around the world. I'm traveling around the world. I see all the scenes. Everywhere is growing right now. But the UK scene was growing and growing and growing like I've never seen, and was just unbelievably proud to watch it get to that level and for the whole world to get eyes on it now that WWE is involved. And the guys are really just unreal.
You're listening to Talk is Jericho.
So let's talk about, like you mentioned, the Insane Championship Wrestling in Glasgow, which did have the 8,000 people at the same arena where the WWE plays.
Hydro.
How did it get so big? Because for, like, just for me, for Glasgow is one of my favorite cities in the world. It's a great wrestling town. It's the best Fozzy town. We have a show there in October that's almost sold out already at the Cat House. Or the Garage, one of the two, whatever. It's 900 people almost sold
both
out.
Both beside each other.
Yeah, I think it's one, whichever the bigger one is. But it's like, you know, it's such a great town. But what is it about ICW that's able to draw 8,000 people for a show?
Well, if you've seen the crowd, if you've not seen the crowd and you're listening, you know, just check it out. Like, when I speak to ICW fans, they're not all necessarily wrestling fans. They're ICW fans. It's such a unique show. Like, it's like a smorgasbord of professional wrestling. You've got the guys who work. You've got the character storylines. There's a little something for everybody, and the crowd are so interactive and part of the show. I always said we should really have a little roster spot on the website page for the crowd, because they're such a part of the show, and they feel like they're part of the show, and they feel like this is their product, and it is their product, and they're very vocal what they like and what they don't like. And everybody just kept, I guess, word of mouth as time went on. We got more exposure in the papers. We had the documentaries on the BBC. So more people got to see about it, hear about it. And it just grew and grew and grew. And it really just caught on like wildfire. And to see the crowd just doubling and tripling and quadrupling was pretty unbelievable. And it was just a testament to all the, you know, the guys and girls there who just believed in themselves so much and worked their ass off. The biggest compliment I got from any of them when I was there was just when I arrived, it felt like, well, we can really do something here, and they wanted to step up their game, and, you know, were willing to come to me and just kind of listen to what I've learned, because I've been with WWE for that amount of time. I'd learned how to do a TV show, now to present a TV show, and they were right there just like, what can we do, Drew? How are we going to get better? And we all worked together to do that. That wasn't anything to do with me. That was all of us working as a team that made it the biggest independent show of all time in November.
Who were some of the other guys on the shows that you liked over there to work with?
Okay, singling people out, because I always miss people out.
I love the name Jack Jester.
Jack Jester, yep, he's right out there.
I don't know anything about him other than you would send me promos from time to time of your stuff that I enjoyed watching, and I would just love Jack Jester, just the name of that.
Oh, yeah,
cool.
I mean, him and I go way back. I've known him since we're about 16.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, way, way back. I think I started drinking. I probably ruined his life. But yeah, like when I returned, the night I returned, it was to save him from the evil faction, the NAK. And then I threw him off a stage at the end of it. Once we had a big emotion return, we're crying, hugging each other, and then I tossed him off a stage.
It was a double, yeah, you showed up as the big baby face and then turned completely heel. Like,
oh, no, they still cheered it. Like, and that's what, you know, like, gave him some fire as well for the feud. But my whole thing was basically I felt like he became stagnant, and I know he's better than that, and I wanted to light a fire in his ass, which I did, which would in turn would help grow the company. So that was my whole thought process and the storyline.
I loved watching some of your promos, too, where it's like, I'm going to murder you or whatever you're saying, like, can't say that. You're not literally gonna murder him, but just like,
well, sometimes if you've ever worked with me, sometimes.
And so when you ICW was kind of where you got your start when you returned, where else did you go? You mentioned that you were around the world.
Yeah, there was the ICW Evolve with Gabe Sapolsky.
Is that kind of where you came back to work in the States, was Evolve?
Yes, that's where I won the title off of Chris Hero, Cassie Solano, my first independent match. Gabe had seen my return to Scotland. He'd heard what I had to say. And, you know, he's a very bright man. He's Paul Heyman's
protege. Yeah. He used to do the programs when I worked in ECW.
Oh, yeah?
I remember that.
Oh,
yeah. That's awesome. He would print the programs.
But, you know, he's seen something in me, and maybe I didn't see as well at the time. And he said, I think I know what you're going for. I've got an idea to pitch to you. And, you know, he gave me the opportunity to become the face.
What did he think you were going for?
Well, basically, I was looking to get all over the world and grow myself and wrestling as much as possible. Mm-hmm. When you're part of like WWE, it's awesome, it's the dream, but in the end we're all just a cog in the machine that's going to keep turning if we're there or not.
Good point.
My point when I was like talking to promos here, I feel like I've got an opportunity to help grow the business I love on the independent level and feel like, you know, I'm making a difference, so the machine will keep turning without me. Mm-hmm. But if I can grow the business, then I feel like I've really achieved something. That was one of the biggest feelings I have right now, is I feel like I really left my mark, made a difference, and it was going to keep going with me there or not. So it was time to come back. But going in with Evolve at the start, you know, he saw something in me, gave me the opportunity, gave me the title, and said, do what you want. Basically, you know, I think I know what you're going for. I believe in you. And I took that title around the world. I defended it around the world, tried to grow the profile of Evolve because the talent were so good, but not many people knew who they were. It was like the Ricochets, the Zack Sabre Juniors, the Timothy Thatchers, the Roderick, people knew Roderick Strong from Ring of Honor, but missing out some people, but a lot of talent people didn't know. And I was like, why don't I know about these people? Mm. I don't know that a lot of people don't know. It's my goal to get the eyeballs on them as the face of the company, and that's where I started to learn to, you know, really be a top guy, really be a, you know, face of the place, like a franchise player, not just this guy's the champion. Mm-hmm. He just does what we tell him. I really learned how to grow a brand, and I did it with the ICW, did it with the Evolve, WCPW in the UK. I was champion with them for a while, and they already had eyes, so I was just trying to get even more eyes on them. And it was really such a big learning experience for me of just how to grow a brand. It was really cool because that was the thing about coming to NXT. I remember like thinking, how on earth am I going to grow like somewhere like NXT? This is what I've done everywhere. It's already such an established brand, but that's the brand I wanted to be brand to show everybody who I am today, what I'm about today, and to challenge myself. Because if I'm going to be a champion, which I am now, it's my goal and it's my job to raise the profile even higher than it's been before. And it's had some amazing champions in the past, some amazing talents on the roster in the past. And I believe right now we have the most depth in the roster there's ever been. And after the takeover there with the storylines going forward, I think we're going to turn more eyes onto NXT than it's ever been on it before.
I like, too, what you just said, because it is something that's going on. There's guys making an actual decision. Obviously, the decision was forced upon you, but once it was, you realized you wanted to go out there and help independent wrestling. Because if WWE didn't take you back, guess what? That's your future. That's where you're going to be living.
Yes.
So you helped build it, but that's what the Young Bucks are doing. That's what Kenny Omega is doing. That's what guys like Zack Sabre, you mentioned, or Will Ospreay, guys that are specifically not signing with WWE because they'd rather work on the independent scene. And like the Bucks and Kenny say, they want to change Cody. I mean, leaving WWE to go work on the scene. And the thing that's smart about it is this is how I got into the business, or my little era of guys with Eddie and Benoit and Dean and those guys, Mysterio. We worked around the world until we got to WWE. You started at WWE and never got that chance to work around the world.
Yes.
And neither did Cody, and neither did a lot of guys, because you come in right away at a younger age. You don't get that experience from a work standpoint and also from a life standpoint, the life experience of what it takes to be on the road and to appreciate things a little bit more.
100%. I like to become like an adult, I guess. Like you grow up in the bubble. And once I stepped out of it, you know, my wife had a lot to do with me me growing up, I guess, and reminding me, you know, this is not normal. Like, it was about J-dates and stuff.
Yeah, right.
It does happen. Growing up in the bubble, and it was like stepping outside going, oh, this is what, I hate using the term normal people, but people outside of outside of the business, yeah, like doing what consider acceptable and not acceptable.
Well, it's funny because I started when I was 19, right? So, and this was not on the major stage like you when you were basically 19, 20, you were, it's the same era, same age area. But I remember, you know, if we had a show like in Winkler, Manitoba, which would be like, you know, I don't know, Aberdeen, Scotland, or even smaller, like it's just a small town show. But that night in Winkler, Manitoba, after the show, hey, come to the bar. We'll get you in for free. You get free drinks. So, you know, you're still getting treated like a superstar, even though it's Winkler, Manitoba, but you're different from the rest. And when that gets instilled in you at a 19 years old, 2021, you do kind of think differently from the norm because that's how you grew up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It does feel totally like normal. But yeah, like my wife got a huge, huge part in that. She's been a huge part of the whole, you know, creating who I am today and
maturity process.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. She's a little younger than me as well.
Where did you go to Japan at all? I can't remember.
I didn't.
That was surprises
like, yeah, yeah, that was like the thing we were like trying to sort out pretty much like right away. And at the time, there just wasn't, you know, space for another foreign guy coming in. And also, like, it was a few guys vouching for me, but again, I wasn't doing something of significance that they might have seen on American television. So I just was kind of doing my thing for about 5-6 months and really getting going, really getting over on the independent level. And it was about that time TNA had contacted me. With John Gaborik, Big had contacted me, and I told him, you know, I'm not looking to be on TV anywhere. I'm doing my thing. It's going really well. I'm making, like, as much as I was making, which is insane to think.
Right.
And then he wouldn't take no for an answer. Just told me, just trust me. I'm going to, you know, let you be you and let you do your thing. And also, you're going to film multiple months of TV at one time, so it's not going to prevent you doing your schedule, and you're going to get paid the same every week for it. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't you? So I came in, and he stuck to his word, and I was literally able to do, you know, the TNA show while keeping the schedule I was keeping and have that exposure, and he stuck to his word times a million, had a great experience there.
I forgot that you were in TNA.
Yeah, and also, like, when I was signed there, I was also, hey, that prevented me also going to Japan. So 6 months where nothing was available, when something became available, I was with TNA, and by the time I didn't re-sign with TNA, and it was pretty much, you know, the Bucks and I were talking. They were like, we're going to get you in. It's more around about the time where I pretty much agreed and spoke to Hunter that I was coming back.
Oh, okay.
So timing-wise, it just never worked out.
Well, how long were you with TNA for?
Almost 2 years.
So that was a good experience. You enjoyed it there?
Oh, fantastic. Yeah.
Who'd you work with there? God, it seems like just yesterday that you're in here. I totally forgot.
I know. It's like a quick time passes, man. This job. I remember asking Glenn, like Kane, once, you know, has the past 20 years gone by as quick as like my past 3 years? And he just looked at me and went, yes. So I tried to enjoy it.
Classic Glenn, right?
Yeah, yes. Savor the moments.
Yeah. So who are you working with when you're
Who's working with? Yeah, yeah. God, a lot of guys. But my favorite was probably Lashley, like Bobby Lashley. You know, a lot of guys like the Eddie Edwards and EC3s and like a lot of guys I got great matches with, a lot of fun with. But Lashley was my favorite by far. He's just such... You know, he's evolved so much. If anyone's not seen him since he was in WWE, I strongly recommend checking him out.
He's another guy that really kind of came into his own after he left WWE.
Oh, yeah. Like, he's just confidence is through the roof. He knows what he is, knows.
Good promo, too.
Yeah, exactly. He's finally, same deal, relaxed, know who he is, knows what he has to say to get across. It's just being himself, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whenever I would work with him, I would tell him that as well. I don't want you throwing punches at me. Nothing drives me more crazy when a guy your size who's legitimately beaten everybody in Bellator throws punches, and then the bloody guy you're against is just beating you up 1 second later. So if you punch me one time, I'm going unconscious. Mm-hmm, so like we're working together to come up with creative ways for, you know, like to implement, you know, his, you know, legitimate fighting style. And also he's massive. He's bigger than you, faster than you, going to tap you out. Like, how do you fight a guy like this? Like, all I've got is I'm the rugged Scott. I'm going to fight, and we're similar kind of sizes, even though he's way more lean. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how we'd structure the matches. And the one punch, like, I lost the title to him eventually. The one punch he hit was at the very end of the match when he punched me and then choked me out. And, like, it was always fun just coming up with different things with him, because it was just nothing better than two big behemoths going at it. I mean, you've got one of them who is legit, and everyone knows he's legit, and you do it the right way. You know, it's a spectacle, and it's a fun challenge putting it together.
So I liked with when Big Show started using the punch for his finish. So there's no punches in the whole match other than when he punches you with that finishing move, you know what I mean? You have to be creative and think about it, because you're right. If a Lashley or a Big Show, these giant guys with fists the size of my head, are going to punch me in the face, and I'm just going to go like, okay, hockey fight, boom, 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 it just kills the story that you're trying to tell.
Such a waste of something, a tool you've got at your disposal, a massive tool you've got at your disposal, and then you just chuck it away. It doesn't make any sense to me.
So you were Evolve champion, TNA champion. What else?
I won the first ever TNA Impact Grand Champion and the World Champion, the Evolve Champion, the Dragon Gate USA Champion, ICW Champion, WCPW Champion, Danish Champion, German Champion, Australian Champion. There's some kind of Irish title in there.
Jeez, dude, calm down.
Yeah, I don't know. At one point, I was just like, Ultimo Dragon, I'm coming for you.
Yeah, when he had nine belts, right? So what did you say? German champion, Australian champion?
There's a Danish one in
Danish,
there.
I didn't even know they had wrestling in Denmark.
Nor did I until I won it. So people just started throwing titles. I stopped people eventually. I was like, don't give me your title, please. There's only so many hours and weeks and months.
You want to fill your bottle up with that? When you go to, let's say, like Denmark or whatever, and I'm sure it's probably not. I mean, maybe it is. Maybe it's a great place or maybe it's not. But when you're on the independent scene, not all the shows are ICW shows, shall we say, the 8,000-seat arena. So what's your mindset when you go in there to a place that maybe there's only 300 people and it's a community center or something along those lines?
First of all, make sure my opponent can actually wrestle. I'm not going to get hurt. Check the ring, secondly.
So how do you judge that when you show up? Have you done any research on your opponent, or do you just get there and see what he's like?
Yeah, it honestly didn't happen very many times. Okay. I was very picky about where I was fortunate enough to be very picky mm-hmm. about where I worked. So it generally didn't happen, but there was a couple of times in places like that where I did show up and I wasn't familiar with a couple of the guys on the roster. So the first thing I'd do, check the ring, and then I would speak to my opponent and I'd speak to a couple of guys on the roster that knew and worked there. There was always somebody I knew to get the feel for it, and I would structure the match accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
But I would always put together a match where, I'd want people to see and think, wow, I've got to come back here. Like, I'd always work my ass off just as hard on that small Danish show in front of a couple of hundred people as I would in front of 8,000 people. And that's the goal every time, was just figure out what they can do, what they're capable of, and just work around that to create the best match possible. And even if they can't physically do a lot of stuff, I'll create an illusion like they've just seen the greatest match I've ever seen, which generally included a brawl through the crowd, so I cheat a little bit, but depending on their experience level. But yeah, I would tend to stick away from shows that, you know, where shouldn't have been run in the first place, as far as I'm concerned, because I was very adamant about stamping out the crap in the wrestling, especially in the UK scene.
Well, especially for you, because if you're trying to build a name for yourself and you're just showing up randomly everywhere, it's kind of going to take away some of your value and some of your mystique, you know?
Yeah.
And I do like you said, something very important is the ring, which if you have, and there's a lot of places, I remember like when I worked in Mexico, you'd show up in some of these, like, you know, the old typical boxing ring, or even worse, just these crappy.
In AAA, a bunch, those rings suck.
Terrible, right? Did you work AAA?
Yeah, I did.
So you went to Mexico as well?
Yeah, I was Mexico as well. So didn't win any titles there, though.
Well, that doesn't count then. But that's what I mean. You show up and things are just shit. And that's the key of a good worker. You can't be a mark to go, I got to jump off the roof to get a reaction. Sometimes you show up and it is what it is. If the ring sucks and the guy sucks, he just Shakespeare it.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
just as much of being a great worker as being able to, you know, do a front flip off the top rope into a body slam, whatever the hell that even means. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. If that boxing ring, there was no chance I was taking anything or
right.
doing anything off the top rope.
You're just like, a mark?
Yeah. I just like figured out like Dr. Wagner and Blue Demon. I just get to know their shtick and then just play around with that because they're over enough. That
Wagner's so good too.
Oh, so good. I just play off of what they do. And then the couple of guys I didn't know so well, I just try and throw them into the crowd and go
on them.
Yeah. I mean,
you're a big dude. So if you don't want to do a high spot, just start brawling.
Yeah. So no, I was guaranteed that's going to get a reaction. It means no bumps.
So when you went to Mexico, what did you think of that after never being there before?
I mean, I've been there with WWE, obviously, but it's very controlled.
Well, it's not. It's not Lucha Libre,
right? Yeah, I remember standing by the curtain. I'm trying to think who I was standing with. But I remember just watching the matches before me. And, you know, I've watched some Lucha Libre, but not that much. But so I was watching the matches before, and my brain was befuddled, like, when it came to the psychology-wise. So I was just trying to figure it out, basically,
yes.
as I was watching. I remember going back in the day to, like, CMLL with Dario and I went and put masks on and sat in the crowd.
Oh, really?
Standing there like sore thumbs, these two giants with masks on.
Gee, who are those guys, yeah.
But so I got a little taste of it, but I was actually watching the show that I was on, paying attention, trying to figure out the crowd and figure out the psychology, and I had no idea. Yeah. I was just like, I'm just going to have to go off of my opponent's stick, because
yeah.
nothing is the same here, and there's obviously a system to it. The crowd love it, but I don't understand it because it doesn't make sense to me. But it doesn't mean it's wrong because the crowd are making the noise they're supposed to make. So I'm just going to have to trust and listen to my opponents in this one.
You know, it's like when
Ray was there, thankfully, he helped me out a lot.
When in Rome, right? You just do what gets the reactions
exactly.
there.
Exactly. Vince would say, know your audience.
Totally. I remember when I first started going to Mexico, I was still on my way up. So I was a little bit more receptive. But I remember, okay, so it's the best 2 out of 3 falls, and there's 3 guys on each team. And there's a captain on each team. So if the captain gets pinned, the fall is over. But if the other 2 guys get pinned, then the captain has to get pinned for the fall to be over. It's like, what?
And then there's that. Then there's also the referee trying to get himself over.
The worst.
I'm trying to fight the referee. That was the only thing that annoyed me because I didn't get the referee gimmick. And I kept trying to fight him every 2 seconds. What the bloody hell are you doing, mate? I'm going to headbutt you if you get over at our expense.
I remember I actually got in a fist fight with a referee in Guadalajara in the dressing room after the show one time. Just yelling and screaming, like how much he punched me, and I punched him back. I'm like, what am I doing? It's like a 60-year-old referee, but he's bowing up.
I've never seen you in any situation where you're almost in a fist fight.
23 years old, you know, I'm just like fighting a 60-year-old man because he screwed up the finish. But
yeah, I don't know many stories I'm allowed to tell here. You remember an Abu Dhabi incident?
Oh, that was great. Yeah, with that guy with the rotten tomato for a nose.
Oh, yeah. I just remember a guy in the street. It was been a real ass, and you weren't shy to tell him. And he wasn't shy to tell you back, this isn't America. He disappeared here. And I was like, okay, let's get Chris.
Talk is Jericho.
So let's talk about your journey back into the WWE. How long was it before you started putting feelers out? Or were you always kind of keeping in contact with somebody? Or how did that work?
Well, I've always kept in contact with like Regal. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a friend and a mentor of mine, so we always, you know, keep in contact.
What did he say when you got let go? Did you reach out to him?
Well, when we just spoke, and he's just like, just go do your thing, basically. I think that's kind of everyone's attitude, was just go out and show everybody.
Yeah, no sympathy, just go out there and keep rolling.
Yeah. Like Fit as well, like he's you know, my mentor, and he just said the same thing. Everybody, Fit's big thing was, wherever you go, don't change your style for them, just be you.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as I was watching like the Mexico show, for instance, and seeing the way they were reacting, it doesn't mean I was going to suddenly start doing lucha moves. It was just figuring out what the crowd were going for, but I'm still going to be me.
The reason
they brought me in is the way I work. I'm not going to change that.
How do you morph into doing that style, but you're still you? Like I said, that's the part of being a good worker is you're adapting to the circumstances surrounding.
Yeah. It's basically when you're in there, like that's the thing as well. Like I was so used to calling far too much because obviously the agents need to know everything.
Great point though.
And I was able to, you know, during that period, really learn, get comfortable at least. I was aware how to do it, but get comfortable doing it when I'm out there. And like even in Mexico match, even with a language barrier, I was able to figure it out. Even if it was just me grabbing them and tossing them, well, I was like, I know he's doing some mad flippy thing, but unfortunately you're getting grabbed and thrown because I know that's the right thing to do.
But you know, it's funny. I was just talking to a friend of mine who's in Japan for the first time and just loving it because you can't overcall stuff because there's a language barrier. And I find you get a little bit too call happy in the States where every single thing is called. Whereas when you go to other countries where there is a little bit of a language, like you said, you don't call as much, and the matches always turn out better.
Oh, 100%.
You know, and one thing I was going to say, too, it reminds me when I was in Mexico, King Haku was there. King Haku's not doing any damn lucha moves, but he was great in Mexico because he did him adapting to the circumstances around him and with the guys he was working with.
100%. They've already got a bunch of guys that do the style perfectly. Why you want to try and be exactly the same?
Right, exactly. So we're talking about how Regal was telling you to be yourself, so you kept in touch with him.
Yep, you know, like if I'd done something that, you know, I wanted feedback on, like I'd contact someone like yourself, like when it came to like promos or whatever, if it was something I was like, right, you know, that's getting a good response, but like all I'm hearing from everybody is, you know, good, good, great. I was like, you know, in reality, if I was that good or great, I'd be main event mania. So areas to be worked on.
There's always something you can do.
Yeah, so like I'd you know, contact people with that. I trusted their opinion and get that feedback, and I just go out and just keep pushing and doing my thing. And you know, at first when I was here, it was like I will be back no matter what, but eventually as I got going, that became, you know, back in my mind, it was just what I'm doing at the moment,
right?
And that's what I learned is, you know, the way you succeed is set short-term goals, achieve those short-term goals with a long-term, I guess, in mind, but just keep pushing and doing what you're doing and don't think about what the next stage is, because chances are if you focus solely on the end game, you're not going to get there. The fun part is the journey.
But you were enjoying that journey too.
Oh, I was loving it. Like I was the point where I was like, man, I don't even know if I'll be back.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, like right now, I'm just in a position where I'm growing so many places. I'm the face of so many places. Felt like they relied on me so much that I wasn't even sure if I was going to, you know, end up back eventually. But as everyone grew and everywhere became self-sustaining, when I wasn't there, I didn't feel like you know, the weight of the keeping it going was on my shoulders. Because just everything was at the level it needed to be, and whether I'm there or not, it's just going to keep growing and growing and growing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, timing-wise, just with, you know, the ownership switch in TNA and the way everything went down at the very end and the contract not being signed, timing was, I guess, just perfect and worked out the way it was supposed to with me coming into to NXT.
Were you renegotiating with TNA at the time?
Yeah, my contract was up, and it's just, like, there was a whole thing. The management switched over, and obviously it's a very big process in getting management switched over, so the contract negotiations never started till literally the last second, and by the time they'd contacted me, my wife and I had made a decision that we weren't going to stay just because of the timing of it all. It's just not the way we do business. It's not, like, their fault. There was such a big switch in the management, etc. They had to get their numbers together, but for us, it was just, we can't go in a relationship this way. It was ended on friendly terms. And it was a good experience. And
did you have a good relationship, good working relationship with Billy Corgan?
Oh, great! He's a friend of mine.
I feel that if Billy would have been able,
my wedding actually.
Oh yeah,
yeah, nice. He should have. I walked in, and I was like, no way. I just said to him, "Hey, if you can make it, cool." And he was, sure enough, he was there.
I feel that if he would have been able to take it over and buy it, that it would be a lot different of a company and more. I don't know, more better is not good English, but I think he was a better choice to be the leader of that company.
Yeah, well, we'll never know for sure, but I do know if Billy had got it, myself and the Hardys would still be there.
Right. There you go.
Same but again, more, like the way the switchover happened, that I understand why. They couldn't get the offer there till the last second. And
yeah.
You know, it was spoke about, and they made, like, you know, play at me at the last second and lots of offers, very generous offers, and I appreciate that, but it just wasn't the way I do business.
I like the concept of him taking over because it's something different with a new mind and a new thought process.
He's great. Like, and
I think that company, with the amount of talent that they did have and still do have, they need to do something different. And Billy might have brought them a different mindset and a different way of thinking.
He only thinks different. That's what's so great about him, why we get along so well.
Right, right, exactly, yeah.
Fantastic.
So did you reach out to NXT and Triple H, or did they come to you, or how did that
work? It was, you know, Darren Regal that messaged me first and just said, you know, Hunter's just want to know what the situation is. I guess they'd heard what's been going on, and you're willing to speak to him. I said, well, of course. willing to speak to him, and then, you know, like, I told my wife, I said, I don't know, like, right now, if this is the right thing. I just talked to the Bucks, and, you know, it seemed like Japan was right there on the table, and it seemed like the next logical move. For me, but once I spoke to Hunter on the phone, and we literally went for about 20-25 minutes, I was sold, like, right away. I was like, this is what I need to do. I told the wife as soon as I got off the phone. I went, there's no even a second thought now. It's time. Like, the time is right, and it feels right, and I'm the right guy that I need to be to do the things that he's going to, you know, give me the opportunity to do. So it was a decision I'm very glad I made, because it's fantastic. Like, since I've came back, you know, the roster's been great, the shows have been great, the vibe's been great, and takeover there was just one of the highlights of my.
How long have you been back for?
4 months.
4 months.
Yeah, so it feels longer. It's crazy.
I know, right? But when you left, when you came back, did you have to call, like, your list of companies that you were the champ or are the champ, and go, hey guys, this is the end of the line?
Oh, man. So, like, the day I debuted, basically, it had been done. Like, I'm going back, I'd done the physicals and that, but they hadn't decided the day I debut. So, Mania Week, or Wrestling Week, as I like to call it, is when, you know, all the independent shows have their big shows around Mania.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
So, in my promos, I'd always refer to, this isn't Mania Week, this is Wrestling Week,
right? Yeah. It's true.
So I was doing a bunch during that, like, more than I've ever done in my life.
Were you there working all that?
Yeah, yeah. I was nonstop all day, every day, pretty much,
mm-hmm.
Doing every show possible. And the day of the takeover was a Saturday. That was my busiest day by far. So I had a signing in the morning. Then I had show right after defending the WCPW title. Then
WCPW?
Yes.
Well, where's that?
They're in the UK.
Okay.
They got some really good buzz. They had, like, Angle over there regularly.
Gotcha.
Ray over there regular. You know,
is that the one that's run by What Culture?
Yes, What Culture.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. So I was a champion there for a bit. Again, great place. Had a great experience there. So I was defending that title on the show around 12. And then I had another appearance. Then I had a radio interview. Then I had the Big Evolve show right after. And getting around in traffic during Mania. And Orlando's bad enough. Never mind during
sure.
Mania. Sure. So I got called that day. Like, okay, tonight's the night. I was like, what? What do you mean tonight's tonight? I said, no, we're doing it tonight.
They called you that day?
So I was contacted that day, like, it's going to happen tonight. And I was like, all right. Like, it was like, all the whole thing was a big, you know, hush hush. Like,
sure.
Only so many people actually knew I was coming back. And yeah, you know, it was, I guess, got to the right channel that day. Like, okay, this is what's happening. Drew's coming back. Tell Drew. So it's, you know, because it was so hush hush, and the last show was with Evolve, and Gabe's got a good relationship, you know, obviously with WWE, etc. So we knew we could work our way around that, but it was a whole thing trying to sort it out. So I did all the appearances. I did do the, you know, the title defense. I did the radio show. I did the next signing. I did go straight to Evolve. I was in the first segment. The show started late. So I got into the ring about 7:30, did the first segment, cut a big promo about the title match at the end. One of the guys, Keith Lee, who's on fire right now, got carried to the back, ran to my car around about, I don't know what time it was now, just over 8 o'clock anyway, driving like crazy to the Amway. My wife's picked up my suit, driving to meet me at the Amway. She jumps in the car. We're in talent relations. And by the time I got to TR, jumping in the shower, trying to get myself together, I had like 20 minutes before they needed me to go to the ring. To sit by the ringside with the camera goes in the crowd, Drew McIntyre. So I'm running like a maniac during that, looking on the camera screen. I'm like, oh, so calm. But leading up to that, I'm running like an absolute maniac. The wildest day of my life. I finally get like my suit, everything on. She's bloody putting me together. They come in, we need you now, Drew. They're leading me to the ring. I finally sit down in the seat, which I guess Adam and Beth had been in earlier, like Edge and Beth had been in earlier, so true Scottish style, I stole their seats as soon as they left. So I was sitting in the seat, and it wasn't until I finally sat in the seat, I had my head down, I looked around and went, oh man, I've not even thought about this. What if they don't react? What if they don't care? Or what if they chant 3MB or something? I never even considered, like, yeah, like what's going to happen here? Like, I know there's quite a knowledgeable crowd here in the NXT. Yeah. You might have been following me, but oh God. And then it was like 5 seconds later, I was on camera with a smile and I heard the reaction. I was like, oh, thank God. I made the right move.
Yeah. You know, that's another thing too. If people only, well, that they do know now, like you're thinking, okay, like it's a big thing, the debut of Drew McIntyre NXT. But yet, even though you have this really tight day, you still have to run and jump in your car.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's not like there's a limo waiting for you.
Oh, no.
They didn't send an Uber or nothing. You got to get in your car and drive to the show.
Oh, no. It's on video. Like, Dave Lagana filmed a documentary called End of Independence. He filmed my last 3 days.
Oh, really?
So if you search on my Twitter, his Twitter, End of Independence, Drew Galloway, the last 3 days are there, and he didn't know what was going on either. So he caught it all in film, and he caught the phone call, and he caught me running to the car to drive off. It's all on film.
So you were shown in the crowd, and then who did you make your debut against at NXT?
I made my debut that Wednesday at the NXT TV against Oney Lorcan, who was Biff Busick in the Independent scene. And he's very, you know, hard-hitting, physical guy. He was a perfect opponent for me, and we had, you know, a really great first match for me, and I hope we get to do it again with more time. So that was really awesome, that one. And then I had Andrade, Cien Almas, mm-hmm. the second one, which was really fun as well.
So you're building up and working.
Yeah,
and working.
So I basically had, you know, a lot of, you know, showcase matches for me. Leading up to a match with Killian Dane, who was Big Damo in the UK. We had big feuds in the UK. It's pretty crazy that
he's a big dude,
big Irish,
big Irish hairy guy.
So it was pretty cool that my you know, big win was against him. Like, he'd been built up as Sanity's undefeated monster, and I've been built up as, you know, returning Drew McIntyre, undefeated in NXT, new guy, and all that. So it was a big, you know, feel going into the match. It was cool to do it with my friend and get that big win, and then I got the title. Title shot with Bobby. And
let's talk about that, John, with the big NXT takeover just this past weekend in Brooklyn. Title match against Bobby Roode. Who's another
3 days ago?
But Bobby Roode's another guy. For years, he was doing tryouts in WWE, and they would never give him a shot. And I remember the one time, this was, gosh, about 10 years ago, maybe even more, he's like, yeah, well, they said they want me to come back next time with a mask for a tryout.
A mask?
But then TNA called me, and I'm like, dude, you got to go to TNA. I mean, if they're telling you to wear a mask after having 5 tryouts, I mean, dude, you're great. Just go. And then here goes the TNA, becomes one of the cornerstones, and now bigger than ever in NXT. Oh. Probably making his main roster debut at some point very, very soon, I would assume. Or if not, he's going to be having some great rematches with you.
Oh, 100%. He's phenomenal. He was already, you know, like a star, like, and he's always been fantastic in the ring. But that, when he got that theme music and he put a few pieces together, the puzzle, now he's a damn superstar.
Like, isn't it amazing?
It is hard to, as a good guy to wrestle him, because the crowd love that music. So you're like, okay, am I the good guy? Or is he the good guy?
Was it hard to be the good guy in Brooklyn? Do people buy you as the good guy?
Yeah. Like, they get behind it, and, you know, it's up to us to tell that story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm very physical, and like, Bobby's willing to, you know, put me over so much. He's so good, such a good heel. Like, the first image of the match is him walking to my chest, so you see the size difference and looking up to me, and you get that visual that people are like, oh, it's about to go down now. So he'd never faced anybody, you know, who was a lot bigger than him and stuff. Sure. So we set the pace, you know, right away, and we got the crowd with it. But he's just so unbelievably good. It's just, when it comes to the time and things, you don't really think about, you're told about over your life. It's the stuff I'm learning with, like, Shawn Michaels when I'm working with him right now, that, like, I've never been verbalized to me in the way that Shawn Michaels verbalizes it to me. You always hear, listen to the crowd, but no one elaborates and listen to the crowd. So I got it in my head, I was like, I listen to the crowd, I'm good at listening to the crowd. But when someone, that experience breaks it down to you in the levels and layers of listening to the crowd, you get it and you get timing better. And you really, you know, getting my PhD in rap. Bobby is a master of, you know, timing and things that I never thought about that a top, top guy needs.
So tell me about that. You mentioned that you're working with Sean. Because Sean is training now at the Performance Center, right?
He is.
On a fairly full-time basis.
Yeah, I'm going to go see him right after.
Right after this, yeah, like in minutes you're going to go. Because I know he lives in Florida now, and he's working at the Performance Center. I assume he's not in the ring taking bumps. So tell me what exactly, do you sit down with him in a room, or do you go in the ring, or how does that work when you're working with Sean?
It's like, you know, a finishing skill. The first rule of the Sean class is you don't talk about Sean class. So I can give, I'll give the basics and I'll tell you about it all.
Is that what it says?
Yeah, that's what it says.
You don't talk about Sean class.
So I'll tell you all the rest off the air. but it's like a finishing school. The guys have been doing it for a while. And we kind of, they sit down and, you know, just kind of talk about it. It's a back and forth as well. Like, he's not just saying this is the right way, even though he's like the best in-ring performer ever. You know, he's very open and likes to, you know, have a back and forth and just, like I say, breaks down things like you've never even considered thinking about before. Like, I was lucky enough, the deal I signed, I didn't technically have to go to the Performance Center, but when I heard Sean was doing classes, I was like, excuse me, can I go work with Sean Michaels?
And then, I know Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn wanted to go back to NXT just so they could work.
I remember when I heard he was coming in before I signed, I was like, man, I suppose any way I can finish my way into that class, even though I'm not with WWE right now.
Because at one point, Terry Taylor was kind of, I mean, he might still be.
Yeah, he's still
Terry
there.
Terry was like one of the finishing class guys. And so this is for the guys that are either very experienced or just about ready to go to the main roster.
Yeah, this is like the last
stage there, right? Yeah.
And it's, like I say, the only way to describe it is that most of us in there have been wrestling a long time. Like, I've been doing it for 17 years now, since I was 15. And it's like getting my PhD. It's like, right. Oh, all these things I think I know, this has been broken down. This makes so much more sense to me now. Like, you just listening to the crowd more is the biggest thing, but like actually breaking everything down and, you know, making things psychology-wise make sense and tell the right story and just everything. Obviously, it sounds redundant, but Shawn Michaels is pretty good.
Well, yeah, but like, you know, this is what I can say this because I learned this kind of on the job PhD with Shawn.
Oh, 100%. You guys, hell of a few.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of my best runs, 2008, suit and tie guy Jericho versus Shawn Michaels, and he's the one that basically made that character into what it was. But what I learned from him, amongst a thousand other things, I think we learned from each other too, but the thing that I learned from him the most was, I remember one time we were having a match. I think it was in Chile. And we were doing the false finishes. And to me, up to that point, false finishes was you had to build the crowd and keep them hot and keep them rolling and keep them going. So we would do stuff and I would always be up before him.
Yeah.
And I don't want you to move until I say, just trust me. I'm like, dude, Shawn Michaels, I'll do whatever the hell you want. So we did some kind of a move and just were there, and it was a big false finish reaction, and then the crowd started going down. He's like, don't move. Then they went completely quiet. Then they started yelling, you know, chanting, you know, whatever the version of This Is Awesome was in 2008, and then they built themselves up again and then built themselves up again. He's like, you know, you don't have to always worry about having, like, listen to the crowd, but let them settle. Don't always feel into the next thing. That's not what we're doing here. We have to sell every single move, which in turn brings the crowd in even more so. If we're just bouncing around, it doesn't work. And I just, like, I don't know if I explained that well, but I'll never forget that. Like, wow, what a easy thing, but it had never been explained to me before.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to reveal Sean class, but that's maybe some things we talk about. Exactly.
I mean, I just revealed it, and I'm sure that's something that was spoke about because Sean told me.
Yeah, like you say, like,
lie there.
It's explained a certain way.
Right.
It's just like,
listen to the crowd.
Oh, it seems so obvious now, but yeah, it's not until somebody explains it that way.
Yeah, exactly. And it just makes you, like, so I always learned too, even from Negro Casas in Mexico. It's, listen, all of us can do the moves, or most of the moves. That's fine. You put them in the right place, whatever. It's the little nuances that make a great worker.
100%.
You know what I mean? And that's one thing that's really good when you can start to feel that.
Oh, yeah. And that makes a difference, like, when you're really feeling it, you know, in the match, rather than, you know, just going through the moves and like getting the standard, this is awesome, and planning your match, like, and we'll get to this is awesome here and then we'll do this.
Yeah, exactly.
Then you're like feeling it and selling and you're in the moment and you're organically getting these reactions that are not entertaining themselves with silly chants or whatever, because you're doing it the right way and you're feeling it, so they're feeling it. And
right.
That was a big thing at the match there at the takeover when we got to the near fall areas, and I was really just taking the time and really listening, even though it was such a big setting and the referee was right in my ear reminding me that we had no freaking time left. Then I was just like, I'm taking my time, we're making this count, we're getting them built back up and listening to them coming up, like you say. It was a really cool feeling, especially on the biggest stage.
There's certain matches that are the money matches. Rock and I used to talk about this, you know, like, go home. It's a championship match. If I take an extra 5 minutes and, you know, one of the other matches has to lose 5 minutes, that's fine. When it's my turn to be in like one of the earlier matches, you need extra time for the main event. I know you guys are on last, but that's the money match. And I never have a problem taking my time if it's a money match.
100%.
You know what I mean? What did it feel like when you won that title?
Oh, it was, I guess there's pictures out there of me holding it. Like, I think my face says exactly how I was feeling. Like, it was once the three count happened and, you know, Bobby put me over like $10 million. I just had to take a second to just compose myself, and then once I got it in my hand, just let everything sink in, it became real. So it was, everything felt worth it, all the miles, all the, you know, beating, you know, myself up physically and mentally, and pushing and pushing, trying to create something, all just felt worth it in that moment. And just when I got, you know, got all out, the big angle happened with Cole at the end, which was cool as well. Like, Adam Cole jumped me at the end and said that the crowd threw the roof and just left us with that awesome cliffhanger, and this is the next stage. It's like a WrestleMania, hit the reset button, boom.
Sure.
And Drew's the champ.
Was a big surprise.
Yeah. So the two lads, Kyle and Riley, show up again. They'd beat the Sanity up earlier. What are they doing here? And then boom, Cole from behind, and we left them with that big cliffhanger, and this is, you know, NXT going forward. It was pretty cool. Like, and I was like loving it. I was lying there like, man, this is going to be cool. Like, we've got something cool going forward here.
Last few questions. What's your plan now that you're back in NXT, you're the champion. Like you said, you got a great feud coming up. Do you still have, is your final goal still main roster WWE?
I mean, I always say I don't consider, you know, NXT not one of
sure.
the equal brands. It's obviously not got the platform, etc. But I always tell the guys, etc., don't use the words moving up. Like, of course, you're going to think what you think off camera and off interviews, and that's cool. But when you're out there, you represent your brand, you push your brand. It's all about NXT. When you get the opportunity, you'll go there.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I'm going to do as much like I did in the, you know, independent UK scene. I felt like I did as much as I was going to do up to that point. It was time to come back, right? Just take NXT as far as I can possibly take it. Get a reign, you know, that can compare to the champions of the past and surpass the champions of the past, because there's some unbelievable champions that have been there.
Mm-hmm.
And just focus on that right now. When the time comes, then obviously, you know, I'm going to want to make my mark on SmackDown and Raw also, and perhaps sealed on Vince McMahon himself and tell him, ah, you were right, sir. Just had to put those pieces together. You saw.
Is that what he told you? You have to put the pieces together?
No, well, again, like for me, that's what it was. He obviously saw something in me back in the day that maybe I didn't see or others didn't see. And it took me a minute to put the pieces together, but he doesn't just say things for the sake of saying it.
Never.
He saw something, and it's pretty cool that, you know, I had to find myself and, you know,
and you
work
did.
Hard to just put together, I guess, what he saw.
Have you seen him since you've been back yet?
I haven't yet.
Okay, yeah.
One of these so the time still comes. I've still got some work to do just to
actually
see him. But yeah, so right now the goal is just work.
And that's what you've been doing. That's what you're going to continue to do. Last question. What was your favorite match that you had over the last 3 years besides the Bobby Roode? I want to talk about something that maybe was in England or in the UK or one of the independent scene. Was the one that stands out for you?
It's hard to single matches out. ICW, I really enjoyed the match with Grado where I lost the ICW title. That was like our first, like, you know, super big one. It was 4,000 people. We got where I was going as the bad guy against Grado, the only white meat babyface left in the world.
Yeah, people love him, right?
Yeah, they love him. So that was cool. In my own country, I was the arch nemesis of Scotland. Funny American Scottish accent.
Yeah.
So he's the big Scottish hero.
Would you say with your funny what?
My funny Scottish American accent that they keep making fun of. I need to talk like this. I'm sorry, Scotland. So I need the world to understand me. We have a very thick accent. I need to be understood. So that was like a cool one. And there's the one with Will Ospreay everyone always, you know, refers to that we had in WCPW before. Right before I came back, actually, and Ricochet as well. Like those guys, like the ones that everyone says, oh, they don't do anything, they just fly. That's lies. They know exactly what they're doing. They can tell a story. And those are a couple of my favorite matches as well.
Great. We'll see you hopefully less than 3 years when you're the WWE champion at some point.
Yes.
I'm sure. Yes, thanks, 100%. Dude.
Thank you for having me again, Chris. Good to be back.
Congrats again to NXT champion Drew McIntyre. And it looks like he's got another angle coming up with Adam Cole on NXT. Adam Cole attacked him ruthlessly after the match. I'm guessing it won't be long before you see Drew on the WWE main roster. He's killing it. He's got all the tools. He's got the look. He's got the size. He's got the psychology, as you heard. Thanks to Drew for coming back. And all right, get your laugh on now. If you want to laugh, if you like laughing, we're going to get your laugh on right now with all the news you do not need to know from Team Tiger Awesome. Let's check them out now.
This is the news with Team Tiger Awesome. In business news, somebody at the office brings their own matches to the men's room. Several employees have noticed the distinct smell of a match in the bathroom in spite of the fact there are no matchbooks readily available to the rest of the office. Currently, the smart money says it's Jeff. In speculative near-future post-existential science fiction news, it's not next year yet, but what if it was? What then? What would we do then? And now, a look at the index finger index. Pointing up slides down to number 5. We're number 1 is number 4. The index middle ring combo is 3. The Dikembe Mutombo jumps to number 2. And finger guns, still the coolest. For more stupid news, listen to the Team Tiger Awesome Show every Sunday on the Jericho Network, right here on Podcast One.
Go subscribe to the Team Tiger Awesome Show at Apple Podcasts. Be sure to leave them a 5-star rating and review as well. As a matter of fact, go check out all the podcasts on the Jericho Network. Give them 5-star ratings and reviews at Apple Podcasts. Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus. A PhD in wrestling psychology. Rock Talk with Mitch LaFon. Mitch has his Guns N' Roses month continues. The Raven Effect. Raven is talking about all of the things in ECW that made him as popular as he was. The flagship show, Keeping It 100 with Conan. All the ridiculosity that Conan talks about. And 5 days a week, Beyond the Darkness. Get your paranormal fix and check it out as they scare the pants off you 5 days a week. And thank you. Thank you to all the Talk is Jericho, amazing sponsors. And thanks to you for supporting them. I'm talking about A&E. Watch season 2 of A&E's groundbreaking docuseries, Leah Remini's Scientology and the Aftermath. New episodes every Tuesday at 9 Eastern, 8 Central on A&E. DDP Yoga, get 20% off the DDP Yoga app and all merchandise at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Thanks to True Car, saves you money, saves you time. The best way to buy a new car, ZipRecruiter. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Jericho to post your first job for free. Go do it now. Get the employee you need, ZipRecruiter.com/Jericho. Thank you for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. And coming up next Wednesday, oh, wow. Who we got next Wednesday? I'm checking it out right here on, the most controversial women's wrestler in the world today, recently stripped of the AAA Women's Champion, Taya Valkyrie, is here to talk about the whole story, why she was stripped of the title, what's going on with her. She is here and she's not happy. She's ready to tell all on Talk is Jericho. Great, great times. We're so excited to have you. We're so excited to have you listening. In the meantime, and in between time, we'll see you next week. But till then, stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. We'll see you on Talk is Jericho next week.
Listen to new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday on the Podcast One app or subscribe at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.